This ESPN Chicago podcast is brought to you by Cover 5, the free-to-play sports game. This week, Cover 5 is giving you a shot at $50,000. How? Download the Cover 5 app or go to cover5.com. Pick five games against the spread, and in week five, if you make the perfect five picks, you win $50,000. Cover5.com.
We have a lot to discuss today. We've got a lot of football, and this will continue with Courtney coming on here in a minute. 1 hour from our Barstool Big Cat. How's he going to react to the Illini football team breaking his Badgers and forcing them to make coaching changes?
Is he doing any better with his gambling, or is he still in the toilet?
Again, it's like when you said that Justin got better from this week.
Yeah,
to
low bar.
Right, yeah. You put down a few more bets. Yeah. There's nowhere to go but up.
That's true. No, that's true.
It's tough to go over.
I stand by that assessment, too, though. I thought that our quarterback was better this week than he was the previous week.
He was, and totally. The play to Mooney was great, and there were some other positive moments.
Yeah, let's take baby steps.
Yes. And we got to get better on our same game parlay, too. We went 0-3 this weekend, so we gotta maybe take suggestions on some of the prop bets going into this Vikings game. We got to put Kirk Cousins interception on there this week, don't we?
Of course, yeah.
We got to have a Kirk.
That's got to be an Eddie Jackson probably gets a pick, right? A fourth and five games?
Whew. Wow, he's been good. When he takes the ball away, that's when he's a difference-making player.
I think he actually has tackled better as well, too.
Yeah. Let's talk to Courtney Cronin, who is all over the Bears beat. The Bears take on the Vikings, a team that she knows very, very well. Hey, Courtney, how you feeling today?
Hey, guys, I'm great. How are you?
We're hanging in there.
We're playing the blame game today, Courtney.
That's a fun game.
Did you hear the list that we compiled?
No, but I did hear your prop, and I think that the Eddie Jackson, Kirk Cousins interception is a good one.
Oh,
because
good.
Watching back that game, Kirk, when we were talking about the four verticals play yesterday with Eberflus, where Mooney, should have bent on to the inside and he ran a vertical route. Kirk did something kind of similar against the Saints, where like Tyrann Mathieu was very clearly going to take Justin Jefferson away and avoided disaster there. But he's good for at least one a game. Yeah. So I would take the Eddie Jackson prop on that.
Right. We put a top five reasons in order. We went around the room as of now through 4 weeks. The top five reasons or people, position groups, or coaches to blame for why the offense is sputtering. Like, we put the...
Sputtering is being kind.
Yeah, kind. Why it's failing.
Yeah.
Justin being one group, the quarterback, whether it's Getsy and Eberflus, whether it's the offensive line, whether it's the skill guys. The one thing we all had in common, Courtney, was we all put Ryan Pace. Not Poles. Ryan Pace was number one on our list.
Yeah, I mean, but we kind of knew that would be, he's part of the mix whether he's here or not because of the undoing that had to be done this offseason, right? Yeah. Because the cupboard's so bare still. Of course, that points back to the previous regime. And I know that for a fan base, it's frustrating when, when the person to blame is no longer here and it's like all of their mistakes, all of their missteps are hurting you now, or at least are something that you have to work through now. So I can understand that. I think that that's probably a fair one to lump into the mix.
Courtney, when a team is averaging through 4 weeks in the NFL 98 net passing yards and the quarterback is completing 51% of his passes and the sack totals are what they are, when you look at this in its entirety, from an offensive perspective, what long-term has you most concerned about this group?
It's the offense is broken right now. And that's like the big thing where I don't think there's going to be some magical fix for any one unit. And I guess it's a good thing in a way because it shows you it's not all on the quarterback, even though like you cannot absolve Justin Fields of blame. And I find it irritating when people look at the pass protection and say, well, he's constant. He's under, he has PTSD because he's been under pressure so much. Well, sacks are not just a quarterback or not just an offensive line stat. I really believe that sacks you know, a lot of times you hold on the ball too long. And, you know, I have a story coming out tomorrow at ESPN.com that dives a little bit deeper into the numbers. You know, a lot of this is on the quarterback. The pass protection isn't great, but the quarterback in holding onto the ball too long and in waiting back there for as long as he has, he's got to be able to, I hate using the word pull the trigger, but like, that's what he has to do. And it's not like your receivers aren't getting open, and then it's not like the play calling can really play to your strengths because, you know, you're so gun shy in a lot of moments. So again, it's like this collective, you know, circle of doom for this offense where I just don't know if there's any one thing that can get fixed over the next week. It all has to work hand in hand, as cliche of an answer as that is, because, and here's a perfect stat to kind of point it out. So he's been pressured on 48% of his dropbacks this season. That's the highest rate in the NFL. At the same time, the Bears rank 10th in pass block win rate, which I know some people don't like our ESPN stat, but that's a stat that shows you that, like, how long an offensive lineman sustains his blocks for 2.5 seconds. So it's you know, you can't have one without the other, it feels like, within this offense. And that's why you're having so many issues and so many of the same glaring issues pop up week after week.
I said to Waddle, and we discussed this yesterday because Hembo from the Greeny Show gave all these stats on the air. I'm also... and all these analytics are good. I see the Pro Football Focus grades. I see the ESPN win rate grades. We've watched these four games, Courtney. We know that there's no way, no how, that the Bears' offensive line is the 10th best in pass pro, correct?
Yes and no. Like, and I mean, I know that people are going to be like, why is she saying no? Well, because, like, there are things. If you are sustaining your blocks, and some of that is the help of max protection when you have tight ends that are brought in to help you if you're facing a really good defensive end. And it's like, where's the pressure coming from? Because on one play, Braxton Jones might be doing a damn good job over on, you know, the left side of the offensive line, and your right guard might get beat. So, like, it's... I think you have to look at it as of a collective body of work of where the pressure's coming from. And when Fields is under duress, is it on him because he's not scanning the field, not staring down receivers or what have you? Like, it's, but I do get, like, why that's frustrating, because it looks like, my goodness, he took 6 sacks this week against the New York Giants. He's been sacked 16 times through 4 games, and, you know, that's the most since Jay Cutler was sacked during the 2010 season through that same stretch. That's a lot. And, you know, it's hard to be able to look at the numbers and say, well, something is not adding up here. But I think by and large, you can point to the pass protection has not been great, but it's compounded by some of the things that the quarterback is not doing to help the situation.
Yeah. What about your perspective on the offensive coordinator and the head coach? My criticism would be the approach, not the run-pass ratio, but the halftime decision in the Houston Texans game, the 3rd-and-4 decision to run it and then kick the field goal, not going for it 4th-and-2. Late in the game. Those are my criticisms. When you look at the offensive approach, what are your criticisms?
Those are all one of them. One of them. All like kind of like one and the same to me.
Right.
I mean, of course, Matt Eberflus overcorrects this week, and like with the decision not to go for it and waste all of his timeouts, and they, you know, run the clock out at the end of the first half of the Houston game. That's the reason that the team got booed off the field, and it makes sense. So he wants to be more aggressive. What does he do? He uses his timeouts to give his team an extra possession before halftime in New York. So it showed that a coaching staff can adjust and adapt, but I don't like the call on 3rd-and-3 from the 5. I really don't, because I understand Khalil Herbert got 1 yard there. That's the closest your team got to the end zone at that point, and would be the closest that the team got to the end zone all day.
You're good with that play call if, in fact, they're going for it on 4th, right?
I mean, if you're going for it on 4th down, yes. I mean, yeah. To kick a field goal there, and I know I talked about this on Around the Horn yesterday with John Harbaugh, you know, opting on his 4th down play, completely different circumstances, but I think some of that factors in. Trust in the quarterback to be able to go for it in those moments. Not saying that, you know, the Bears had to go with Justin Fields there, but are his legs not his biggest asset? Yes. Like, why would you not allow him to, you know, try to run the ball in there? I mean, he's literally done it. He did it in Green Bay a few weeks ago, and I mean, that's kind of been his MO down in the low red zone. Like, run a zone read. Like, let him win you a let him win a rep right there, basically. And I just didn't like that call. Obviously, with the Velus Jones situation and you know the punt after that, and I think just everything felt like it was snowball. It was a snowball effect coming out of that moment that just didn't work. But I, you know, I'm mostly tripped up by the play calling inside the 5 yard line, because that 56 yard pass that Mooney caught from Justin Fields, it was null and void because they decided that on 3rd and 3 from the Giants 5, you know, after that they weren't going to go for it on 4th and 2, and that was troublesome for me.
Courtney Cronin, our Bears insider, joining us. It's Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. I look forward to Thursdays, Courtney. I like Getsy days because I think he always says some interesting stuff, whether you agree or disagree. Last Thursday he said, this is our offense. We're not running anything. This is what we do. My fear is Matt Eberflus Lovey 2.0, where he wants to play defense, he wants to take care of the football and win with special teams, and is never really going to let it go? Or do you believe that they're protecting Justin in the line because they can't do as much, and as the team grows, they will expand and they will get with today's modern NFL?
It's hard to say, because you want to – I don't know if they're going to be able to see Justin grow enough this season in order for them to dive into the full depth of their playbook. I really don't, because there's too many mistakes that are happening, and you don't have enough talent and experience around Fields to make up for those mistakes. So – what you're seeing right now is a truncated version of the playbook. And I know that Luke Getsy, like, here's the thing, and I like Luke Getsy, the gung-ho excuses of, no, we trust our quarterback, like, you know, it's matchups. That was great last week. No one is buying that this week. Not at all. Not after we saw what happened with some of the play-calling decisions in the Giants game and the fact that your offense went to the red zone 3 times and walked away without a touchdown. So his tone's going to have to change on that, because realistically, no one's buying that you trust the quarterback. They just don't. And so I think, though, that they have to now work within the confines. And it's a weird, like, dumbing down the offense in a way. If you want Justin Fields to do certain things, you have to make it as easy as possible for him, whether that's rolling him away from pressure, whether that's, you know, utilizing more play action. And it's not like they don't. That's kind of like the misnomer in this. And I remember last week people were like, well, why aren't there more bootlegs? Why aren't, like, this is a team that's middle of the pack in play action usage, like 14th most in the NFL. But he struggled on those plays. Like, he had a 56 QBR and completed 63% of his passes on play action last year. That's down to 44 and 48 respectively. Like, he's had 11 design rollout dropbacks this season. That's a lot. Like, that's top 10 in the NFL. Like, so they are doing things. It's just that he's not executing it. And for Matt Eberflus, I think he looks at it and says, well, I want to, you know, we got to win games somehow. Like, they can't look at this year as a throwaway year in the sense of just, like, tank and, like, don't win games. Like, you have to try to win games in spite of your quarterback. So what's the way to do that with the way that this team's constructed? Run the ball and hope that your defense can be more opportunistic than they were. I mean, at least, like, get the second half of your defense to show up more often and hope that that's how you can win games. You're going to be scraping by. That is what this is. Right. This is a scrape-by season. Do it however you can. And honestly, just try to survive week to week.
Yeah, and keep your expectations low. And then Next year you have a full complement of picks and $100 million to spend. Are the quarterback conversations wacky in other towns? Like, this isn't your first rodeo. Like, you've been in Minnesota. You've been in other places. Or is the quarterback conversation in this town maybe different than you've experienced? There are a lot of people that get very offended if, for whatever reason, you have something less than positive to say about QB1.
So I was just on a podcast with some friends in Minnesota, just because, you know, I was there for 5 seasons. I saw a very different quarterback situation my first year there, where it was supposed to be Teddy Bridgewater coming off the injury, but you have a backup quarterback lead you to the NFC Championship, and then the team bails on that and goes and signs who they believe is a franchise quarterback. The criticisms that I saw with Kirk Cousins was that people look at the value and the amount of playoff wins that this quarterback has and say he's not worth it because he got the $84 million contract when he first signed and then just kept taking money from this team. He's got a fantastic agent, by the way. I mean, I think that you can't really blame the quarterback. Like, Mike McCartney is one of the best agents and one of the best humans doing this job, and he's very good at it. But that was like the why people would be upset about like what people would be upset about up in Minnesota when I was covering the Vikings. Now here, I feel like there's a group of, because we talked about kind of the differences like in how quarterbacks are viewed. Justin's at such a different part of his trajectory as an NFL player. And I think you have a section of the fan base who thinks that he's been set up for failure and that it's not his fault and that everything else, you can point the finger at the front office, point the finger at the coaching staff, point the finger at his pass protection, point the finger at his receivers, and it completely absolve your quarterback of blame. And then there's other people who are ready to pull the plug right now on October 4th and say, okay, like, you know, nice knowing you. You had a year and right. a quarter to develop and you're not the guy. So I just... You guys correct me if I'm wrong on this. This city has never had this.
Amen.
Right.
So
yes. Right.
That's the
problem.
When you get close, when you at least like have a taste of it, being like, all right, things are going to get better, and then they don't, that's when people get up in arms about stuff. So I just, it's like you've been so like abused for so long that you almost have Stockholm syndrome when you take a look at like the quarterback situation. You see like a little glimpse of hope and people are telling you, I don't know, ease back a little bit here. It's the third preseason game against Cleveland. Let's not get drunk on this right now. And that's why I think people get so upset about it, because it's like they see a glimpse and they can't look at the nuance. They can't look at the context. And then they realize when it all falls apart that everybody else was right. So then they get defensive about it. That's
right.
Kind of
and people dig in. Right. Absolutely. And I think a lot of the people who did not like Trubisky have become super into Justin Fields. And then they get very, very they're like now the same people as what they used to rage against with the truthers. They used to get mad at the truthers who would always defend Mitch at every turn. And Mitch was the great. And they would say, no, he's not. And now they're doing the same thing with Justin, where he's going blameless and he's not, he shouldn't be the number one blame, but there are things, like as you keep pointing out, that he's doing wrong.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's simply because this market has not had stability at the position.
Ever.
Like if you had, ever, literally. I mean, were you guys alive when Sid Luckman was alive? No, obviously
I probably
not.
Was, because I'm the old guy.
Ages.
I'm the old guy in the building.
But like,
Waddle was four.
Like, I remember asking my dad about that once, because he was alive when Sid Luckman was playing. And it's just like, all the years after that, where it's turnover after turnover after turnover, like, not every city's like that. I mean, it's not even that you have to like go to places where you had John Elway for however many years in Denver, and you had like 10 years of stability and then a couple years and then more stability when you get, you know, down the line. Like, this has literally been a consistent turnover every 4 to 5 to 6 years here in Chicago, and that's it. Just these people have no idea how to handle that, because it's, well, they do, because it's all they know. They don't know how to deal with the growth process, because they've been sold a bill of goods every single time that this next guy is going to be the answer. This next guy is going to, you know, be the one who fixes all the problems. But there's a lot of time that it takes to figure out whether a quarterback can actually be a franchise guy. And I remember saying this throughout the offseason, the Bears probably will not know an answer, a true answer. They'll have some idea, but they won't know an answer on Justin Fields at the end of the 2022 season. It's not fair to him to expect that. It's not fair to themselves to expect that, because the evaluation process would be flawed and get a giant I for incomplete based on what's not around him this year and the position that he's been put in to try to rise above all of that. It's physically impossible to ask somebody to do that when you look at still some of the talent deficiencies across the board. So what I think you have to do, and again, I feel like a broken record saying this, he needs to improve without the burden of wins and losses on him.
Yeah.
And we did see, it was small improvement.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to like silver lining my way out of this, but we did see some improvement in very few moments this past weekend. He said he felt better with the passing game. Matt Eberflus even said, you know, it's a team that clearly sees the deficiencies in pass protection, whether it's on Fields or whether it's on the offensive line. And that's why they blitzed him on 54% of his dropbacks. And he handled that okay. But the throws that he did make, it's like it's not enough every week to hang your hat on, but at least it's something.
Yeah, it's progress. Where do you think, if you had to read the tea leaves, where do you think they're at and their evaluation process of him through four, obviously very small sample size, but through four games?
I think they're trying to make sure they don't kill his confidence. I think that's with some of the play calling. I think certainly that's with the rhetoric after games, but in press conferences. But even yesterday with Matt Eberflus talking about the four verts play, which was, I know Cap didn't agree with me when we talked about this yesterday morning. I'm sorry, Darnell Mooney was open.
Throw the ball to him.
That was a clean
period. End of story. Throw the ball to him.
Clean pocket.
Yeah.
So he had time. He did not have to tuck the ball and run. And when you're watching him, his eyes do not go across the field. You're supposed to wait to, like, wherever the safety's going to go the opposite direction of that. You saw number 48. He was breaking to the outside to get St. Brown. Mooney would have been open for a touchdown. Now, does he catch it? Does he do all these other things? Yeah, we don't know. But it's plays like that. And when Eberflus is saying that's a very basic play, that's kind of like a come on, Justin type moment. We're not going to sugarcoat this. It's a tough love moment where the head coach is calling you out, doing it in a gentle manner, but also being like, dude, come on, you can't just tuck and run with that. You have to keep your eyes downfield longer because you had time in the pocket.
So, even if the excuse coming from the building as well, and part of it is them giving him cover, is, well, we told them if that's your look, then you tuck or run.
It was cover two, and they said, well, like, you know, you're supposed to, like, take the, because they're afraid of him throwing an interception. So they said either take the check down or scramble. But there's common sense within that, like, right. I've got time. I better throw it. Like, you've got to take a chance there. I mean, and again, situational awareness. How close have they been to the end zone or been in the red zone at that point of the day? I think it was twice at that time, and they came away with no points off touchdowns. So you have one more shot before the two-minute warning. Go for it.
Yeah. You know, the one criticism, too, that I've had that I'd like him, and I think Waddle brought this up off the air, and I don't know if we've ever had the conversation on the air. Guys like Russell Wilson in his prime, Lamar Jackson to a point, Josh Allen for sure, Patrick Mahomes for sure, when they're mobile, they're not always looking to run. They're being mobile within the pocket looking to throw. So whenever he's ready to run, he doesn't look, while he's still behind the line of scrimmage, there could be someone downfield. He's made up his mind. Eyes up. Looking at what, while running is a good thing, and you don't always have to run to gain yards. You could run to create another throwing lane or to create an opportunity.
Well, and he is, I would argue, he's more accurate when he's on the move than he is from in the pocket.
Look at the scramble drill at the end, right. Everyone was saying, look how good those throws were.
Right.
Off balance, and he's running. Like, I would like to see him move to throw rather than to move just to move.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, that's, again, his greatest asset is his legs, and he's got a hell of an arm. Like, I'm not saying that he's not putting that trope on and that he's a running quarterback, because he's not. He can make plays from the pocket, but I just don't know if they're capitalizing on, in certain situations. Like, I will continue to go back to that the fourth and two from the two. Like, They should have called a play where he had an option to check out of if you want to throw the ball there. If you trust him to throw the ball there, great. But if not, check out and run, because that's what makes him so good. He's athletic. He can bulldoze a guy at the goal line. He's a good quarterback in those moments. I just don't know why they're not tapping into all of that, because that's one of his biggest assets he brings to any team.
Good stuff, Courtney. We appreciate the time as always.
Thanks, Courtney.
Thank you, guys. Talk to you soon.
There you go. We'll talk to her Friday right before the Bears game.
I agree with her that I think, you know, we can call it incremental progress, and we can suggest that it's coming from a very, very, very low bar, but you saw some positive things on Sunday that you didn't see against the Texans or the Green Bay Packers, which baby steps maybe, but is still progress in the right
direction. Sure, if you put four baby steps together, now all of a sudden you're two steps ahead. You know what I mean?
Like,
keep taking, going forward. Yes. I don't want one step forward, two steps back. Capitalize now against the Vikings.
Yeah.
It's not going to be easy, like a lot of people on Twitch saying, oh, he's got a split second to do it. It's not an easy job. If it was easy, every quarterback would make it. It's hard.
The 51% completion rate tells you. That is the biggest. That is a flashing red sign telling you he's not taking the easy ones, that he's ignoring the layups, because you can basically complete 65% of your passes in this league just by checking down. And again, at some point, you can't live via the check down, a.k.a. Mitch Trubisky. But it's a good starting point for a quarterback that is struggling and trying to find confidence.
Good stuff. Let's get into Waddle's World, some fun stories, and then always the highlight of the week, Barstool Big Cat joins us at 4.
This is Waddle's World.
And in Chicago, Tom Waddle. He can't run, he's not fast, but he gets open.
Bears legend.
Amazing.
9 career TDs in the NFL.
He caught everything that was thrown and took every hit that they could give him.
Tom Waddle.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
It's time to find out what's on Tom's mind.
Is that why you are here?
As we go inside Waddle's World.
This Gladiator movie that, speaking of are you not entertained, is it a movie that when you see as you're scrolling that you'll stop and watch or no? Is there a movie that's like that?
I know a lot of people. Shawshank, I think, is the ultimate one like that, where I think Goodfellas is like that.
I ask because there was one of those that's on my list that I stopped on last night at 11:30, and I gave it as long as I could, about 15 minutes, and then I just naturally, my body gave out.
So it was not a stop. Oh, so it wasn't because were bored. It was just because you were tired.
Yes, because I'm old and I was busy.
Like Step Brothers is that way? Was it Step Brothers?
No, it was not.
Like any of those comedies, you know, from the this is a drama.
Yeah. Action.
Action.
Now you won't get it.
What is the Equalizer
with Denzel Washington. Yeah. One of my favorite movies of all time. Like the one of the best badass roles on the face of the planet.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
Oh God.
I know.
I think
we've had this conversation before.
I was scrolling through the list, the guide, and when it came up, it was 11 o'clock. I go, F yes, The Equalizer's on. And my wife was like, turn that down, will you?
So it's a movie
and then
that
she
I
went
need back to go
to
back
playing
to watch.
Words with Friends.
She's still playing Words with Friends?
Yeah. She's got like 20 games going on at the same time.
So do I need to go back to The Equalizer?
I don't know.
Early 2000s?
Denzel Washington's one of my favorite actors, and his role is just like it gives me the tingles watching.
Is it early 2000s?
Probably I would say 2013, 14, maybe 10 years old. But
I'm surprised.
By the way, Waddle's World is brought to you by
14.
Wintrust Community Banks, Chicago's banks. Find your nearest Wintrust Community Bank. Visit wintrust.com/finest, member FDIC.
I'm surprised that you still, I'm not surprised, but I don't go to the guide anymore. I don't channel surf.
We had just finished watching this week's episode of House of the Dragon.
I'll go to like the streaming services guide.
Yeah.
I'll go to Hulu, see what's new there. I'll go to Netflix. I very rarely go to the cable TV.
I think it was a product of me being tired, so I was just looking for something to put me to sleep. And then when I saw The Equalizer, and it was only like 4 or 5 minutes in, I was like,
out.
And
yeah,
so
can I give you really quick? We've got Would You Rather?
Today. Yeah,
and I have a Would You Rather question up there that we developed in the pre-show fistfight. I was going to ask a simple Ozzie Guillen question, like, do you want Ozzie Guillen to manage the White Sox? Because that's been one of the topics. And then it got like Danny's been infatuated that the White Sox need to go after Joe Maddon. So we made it a Would You Rather, Sox fans. Have Ozzie Guillen come back a second time or get Joe Maddon? And based on that, I just want to share with you, send us your Would You Rather questions, sports or otherwise. Use the hashtag WS Would You Rather. You could win Lou Malnati's pizza. Send it to Tyler Aki and Jeff Meller, and we will read them 1 hour from now. So you got an hour to send us your Would You Rather questions.
What was your answer? Who would you rather?
I like Joe. I've always been more. They need a guy who
didn't work for him with the Angels.
He's more of a player's manager. Now, was that a workable situation? It didn't. The team, after he left, certainly got even worse, didn't they?
It's hard to imagine, though, that they weren't better. Like, I get it. You know, you need to have depth as well as marquee names. You had Rendon, you had Trout, you had Shohei.
Rendon was hurt most of the year, wasn't he?
But still.
Yeah, he was gone for 90% of the season.
Oh, he was?
He's gone that long? He was gone pretty early.
Yeah.
But it didn't work for Joe.
No, it didn't. But again, I don't. He may be too loosey goosey for this crew. This crew, like as Liam Hendricks said, may need an authoritarian. How did he term it?
Authoritarian.
Yeah, I think that's how he said it.
What else did Liam say?
Meller brought up the good point that the time to go to Ozzy was mid-season, and get the immediate bump. Like the Phillies did. Like, that was the time and the place for Ozzy, where he could have used his knowledge on the team and the way he manages in a short term, come save the season. And if you do, then we'll continue to ride with you next year. And if you don't, hey, we all tried. And it was worth it.
Yeah.
So, vote on it. Send us your Would You Rathers. Hashtag at WS Would You Rather.
Did you see that the NFL power rankings are out from ESPN? Week 5 power rankings? Do you know where the Bears were last week over the Houston Texans?
28th? 27th?
No, they were actually, they had moved up all the way, I believe, to 22 after that huge win over the Houston Texans.
Now are they back to like 26 or 27? 28?
You tell me.
27.
No. 28.
28.
Just ahead of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And then ahead of the Washington Commanders. The Carolina Panthers are 31. The Houston Texans are ranked dead last. Do you realize that the Bears are ranked dead last against the run, having allowed 733 rushing yards through four games? That's 183 rushing yards per game. They rank dead last in passing yards offensively per game with 98. And I believe they rank 31st in points per game, averaging 16 points per game.
Do you want the Steelers or you want the Bears? You want the Steelers.
Steelers. I mean, the coach has got a long track record of being fantastic.
The Steelers.
Their offensive line, Steelers' offensive line, not very good.
Neither
defense,
is the Bears.
That's true. The defense obviously missing TJ Watt. But yeah, so the Bears have dropped back to 28.
Okay.
So whatever. NBA GMs see the Milwaukee Bucks winning a title.
Really?
NBA. General managers, the survey, 43%. So, that's what you get.
Slight
favorites. And Luka was tapped as most likely to win the most valuable player.
Boy, there are a lot of
Bulls,
great players.
Bulls start
too.
The preseason tonight. Will we see any of the guys?
Yes.
Really?
You will see all of them.
Ooh,
I think they're all supposed to play tonight.
Let's do this.
I think between 15 and 20 minutes.
You going to have your Bulls buzz on?
I will. I think it's the perfect time where the Cubs and Sox are down to the last two games. Let's get basketball going.
Let's do it. What's their total? Where are they at?
It's an interesting one. I'm not totally sure. I'm not as bullish on it as I was last year. No pun intended.
Yeah. Are you protecting yourself and your feelings this year? Are you?
No.
If they come out to a hot start, are you going to be?
No,
marbles against the wall again.
I want to see it. They don't have a point guard or a real true starting point guard. They didn't improve themselves shooting, and I believe many teams in the East and the West have improved. They're in a club of teams that really didn't get better. Marginally better here or there, maybe. Patrick Williams is a wild card. Zach's another wild card. Every breakdown I hear on the Bulls never includes Zach. Zach's got to play like a max.
Listen, you got the max. Now, I think the biggest, especially with Lonzo out for the foreseeable future, it's now up to Zach to, take his game to the next level.
So that's where they get better, is if Zach's better and healthy and if Patrick Williams takes a big step.
Yes, no question.
Not
and
then
Vooch hit that three a little more frequently as well,
Did you hear him make excuses the other day? This is what drives me crazy. Because when I started my career, I was never a three-point shooter. The three-point shot is not something that I consider amongst my best weapons.
Well, stop taking it then if you're not going to use it. If you don't think you're any good at it, then find something else to do.
It's not like they're asking him to be Steph Curry and create his own shot. He is the product of a wide open three.
I thought that was one of his things. The Steelers have, in fact, moved on from Mitch, and they list rookie Kenny Pickett atop their quarterback depth chart. Think that did that come exactly when most people anticipated that it would come?
Well, I guessed game four.
Good call. Jerry Jones says Dak Prescott is not ready quite yet, but is leaving the door open for maybe him returning on Sunday. I don't know why you'd rush him.
You wouldn't.
You've got a defense that is playing red-hot football and Cooper Rush, or is it Cooper? Cooper? Or Cooper?
Is it like Cooper, one of the Mannings?
Cooper,
it's Cooper, Cooper Rush.
So if the Mannings are doing a Manning cast with the Dallas Cowboys and Cooper Rush is out there, they're calling him Cooper.
Is that their accent or is his name pronounced Cooper?
I don't know.
Cooper Manning.
I don't know how you go C-O-O-P-E-R and that's Cooper.
That's got to be a childhood nickname. You know those guys. They called him Cooper.
Did you see, too, that they've got Eli in the... What was his name? In the, as he
Chad Powers.
Chad Powers. That he has sent after Shefty was tweeting about the Giants quarterback situation. Omaha Productions sent out a tweet that Chad Powers is ready and willing.
Oh, perfect.
Can you imagine if he would come back playing the Giants to play the Giants as a quarterback position as Chad Powers?
I like it. I like it a lot. Hey, did you know it's Fat Bear Week?
What is Fat Bear Week?
What do you think it is?
Fat Bear Week. Is it something to do with the bear, the television show? No? Is it something to do with New Orleans, like Fat Tuesday? Fat Bear Week.
Have a guess.
Is it like just people who embrace their bearded fat boyfriends?
Fat Bear Week is back. The annual competition hosted by Alaska's National Park has announced this year's contenders as it kicked off the event, meant to celebrate the brown bears as they pack on the pounds before winter hibernation.
Okay, so this is literal bears.
The competition works by using a bracket format that pairs the bears against each other, giving online voters the opportunity to choose the Fat Bear Week 2022 winner over the course of several rounds.
I guessed everything wrong.
Everything but the actual fat bears. It's okay. I think you were trying to be correct. And by the way, Loretta Lynn has passed away at the age of 90. I believe it was 90.
You were a big Loretta Lynn fan back in the day, right?
I would not say that Loretta Lynn was. I was a huge fan, but I know the parents and all of the grandparents were obviously fans of the country queen. So she has passed away at the age of 90. Loretta Lynn, the Kentucky coal miner's daughter, whose frank songs about life and love as a woman in Appalachia pulled her out of poverty and made her a pillar of country music. She has passed at the age of 90. So, yeah, I think that in, you know, kind of in my family lineage, she is somebody that everyone looked up to.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. That's a good call by you. When we come back, I have another cheating scandal. This has nothing to do with anal beads and chess. But it is a scandal at an Ohio tournament that I think you will find quite entertaining. That's next.
Chicago's home for sports is on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Before I get to the cheating scandal in Ohio, remember the story I told you the other day about Taco Bell is apologizing for their bad breakfast menu, and they're going to try to make amends and make it better? They've hired Pete Davidson to help with it.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Pete Davidson, the comedian?
Yeah. Yeah, he's going to be the guy. Yeah, he's going to be the guy that's going to help get them over the top with their breakfast menu.
Look, he gets anything he wants these days. So...
He's not still dating Kardashian.
No, he's on to the next.
Who's he on to now?
Who knows, but it's going to be someone.
Wasn't he with Kate Beckinsale before? And
that was
then?
A while ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What's the big one that put him on the map, the singer?
Oh, Ariana Grande.
Ariana Grande.
Yep.
Remember, he was all broken up over the breakup, and then he's... like now, all of a sudden, he's got
moving
the
on, moving on.
It's the BDE. That's what they say. That's what they say about him.
Or no,
it's the just, BDE.
Is it that, or is it just the BD?
Yes, right. But I think there's the energy
is important. For energy, effect.
It's the energy that now everyone's like, if she was with him and she was with him, he's got it going on, and now it's a reputation.
Interesting. How much would it take for you to sell a kidney?
Well, I wouldn't.
Google is showing ads to sell your kidney for $1 million in India. I asked Meller at the break.
In India?
Well, no, I'm asking. Is there a price? I said, Meller, would you do it for $1 million? He goes, no. I said, $5 million? He goes, no. I go, $100 million? He goes, Yeah, well, of course.
No. I got yacht money.
Yeah. I got some yacht money.
I guess $100 million, I guess. Twist my arm.
Or... What are we talking about here?
What do you mean, what are we talking about? You're selling your kidney.
And then what deficiencies are you at then?
You can live with one kidney.
I know, but, like, what are we talking? And you can live, and but what...
I think you can be a fully functional... I would probably have to tap the brakes on as many drinks as I have. I know the liver is probably most affected by alcohol, but the kidneys probably would get a bit of a workout as well, right?
You're looking at me like I'm a doctor here. I have no answer for you. You went to broadcasting school at Syracuse, Tyler. You should know.
What would it take for you? What's your number to give up your kidney?
A couple mil. Yeah,
That's it?
Oh, yeah.
$2 million and you're giving up a kidney.
Probably, yeah.
Quarter million. He's like $250,000. Can you pick your doctor? Are you allowing us to pick our doctor? Like, if I want to go to Northwestern Medicine, I can do it in Northwestern.
Yes.
I don't have to go to, like, faraway countries.
I love if you Google donate a kidney.
You'd have to sign a
waiver.
A waiver.
I like if you donate, if you put donate a kidney, like, fourth on the list is, can you still drink alcohol with one kidney? And yes,
and
you
what's
can.
The answer?
Yes, you can.
Well, like I said, your liver is more. You can actually donate part of your liver as well. They take a piece of it, and you can still live with your liver. Like, if you know someone that needs a liver transplant, like, they can take, I think, I'm no doctor, I think they can take a piece of your liver. Hmm. What?
I don't know that.
I'm just asking, what would it take?
I'd have to research.
Did you have a number?
Right now, I don't have a number. Right now, it's a
$10 million.
No.
Mellor, what was yours?
100.
Oh, really? 50. Okay, really? It's 100. Here's 50.
What's yours?
Here's your 50. Number. That's good.
Here's 50. You're doing it for 50?
I don't know. I have to have a long thought. I kind of feel like 100 will seal the deal. 50? We're still in negotiations.
We're talking about now, what, 25 after taxes and all that?
Yeah, no, there's no taxes when you're selling a kidney. That's cash.
Wait. There's taxes on everything.
Not on
the black market, there aren't.
No.
You can get a bag of 20 of 50
million. No, you can't just be selling organs. That doesn't work that way.
It's in gold bullion.
Not doing this in a bathtub. Like,
nobody is telling you to do it in a bathtub. I'm telling you, but that doesn't mean you have to pay taxes on it.
Waddle's right, yeah.
What was that guy? Do you know who he was? He just looked at you like he made an eye.
I think I'm supposed to know him, so I gave him the thumbs up, and then he stuck his tongue on him.
Yeah. That was odd.
Sometimes I don't know. Like, you never know.
Me too. Your first inclination, because you're a nice guy, is to wave and give the thumbs up. Well, next thing you know, someone's giving you the devil bird spitting at the window.
Waddle, would you give up a kidney for unlimited use of a private jet?
Whoa. For the rest of my life?
Yes.
Let's put a value on that.
No, like, there's no value.
I'm trying to calculate.
Right. How often do you think you're going to utilize
every
this?
Every effing weekend. If it's my private jet, I don't have to pay for it.
What's on your hood? What's all that white stuff on your hood?
What are you talking about?
He's got
Danny was bringing this up in the meeting today. Because where Waddle sits in the office.
That doesn't sound very good. So,
white powdery substance on your hood. Right. What is that?
I have a sweatshirt that's got a hood on it, and I was leaning against the wall.
Oh, sure. And it just all of a sudden.
It's cocaine, man. You want to get high? How about some booger sugar? Can I get to the cheating scandal in Ohio?
Yes.
Real quick. There's something fishy going on in the world of competitive fishing. The would-be winners of almost $29,000 at an Ohio fishing tournament were disqualified on Friday after it was discovered their fish were stuffed with lead weights and fish fillets. Jason Fisher, who just happens to be the director of Lake Erie Walleye Trail Tournament.
Jason Fisher, this is not real.
Told CNN he was immediately suspicious when one team's fish weighed almost twice what he expected they would at the Cleveland Championship weigh-in. The walleye in the bucket looked like they should each weigh about 4 pounds, but the total weight indicated that they would have to be at least 7 pounds each. I thought there was just no way, Jason Fisher said. I could also hear that crowd grumbling like, no way, there's no way. I physically felt the fish, and I could feel hard objects inside the fish. The moment when Fisher discovered the alleged cheating was documented in several now viral videos posted on social media showing Fisher surrounded by competitors slice open the fish with a knife and pull out what he said was a lead ball.
Did you say, Tyler, that Billy Football was
From his video. PMT? Yeah, he was the one who put the video out. It's not his video. It's just a collection of a bunch of videos.
And that's how it went viral?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yes. We can talk about this with Big Cat.
That's pretty ingenious, yeah. First of all.
Let's talk to Barstool Big Cat coming up next about the Bears and
Fields.
We'll ask
him about how much he would take for have to sell a kidney.
That too? He always does the... Has he already made the pinky proposition?
Don't know.
We'll talk to Barstool Big Cat coming up next.